getting sober requires a lot more than mind over matter, a lot more than willpower. It's about leveraging the support around you. People in recovery typically need a mix of medical help, emotional support, and changes in lifestyle to manage their addiction, not just mental determination. As both a therapist and someone embracing the recovery lifestyle, there's one tool I always recommend to people needing extra accountability: SoberLink. SoberLink is a high-tech breath analyzer system designed to help you get and stay sober. And here's why I love it. You'll test the same day every day, eliminating testing anxiety. Friends and family receive instant test results, helping you rebuild trust and preventing relapse. Accountability is a part of that, and it's something to really be embraced. Devices have built-in facial recognition, so your support circle knows you're testing, and tamper-resistant sensors flag any attempts at trying to beat the system, so your sobriety is never questioned. So let 2024 be your best year yet. Visit soberlink.com/TAM to sign up and receive $50 off your device. That's soberlink.com/TAM. And let accountability be your guide. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Addicted Mind podcast. My name is Dwayne Osterlund, and I'm your host. And today, my guest is John Dillon. He is a singer and songwriter, radio producer, guitar maker, and author. And he is going to talk about his current project, the album Hope Road, From Addiction to Recovery. John's going to share his story of finally finding sobriety and spiritual growth through the 12-step community, and how now he is sharing his hope and wisdom through his music. It was great to talk with John and hear his story about how he tracks his own recovery through his album and decided to write this album and share it with others who may still be struggling and need more hope in their life about the possibility of having recovery and having that fulfilling and thriving life. I hope you enjoy John's story, and stay tuned to the end of the episode to hear one of his tracks from his album, Hope Road, From Addiction to Recovery, The Help I Need. All right, let's go ahead and start this episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Addicted Mind podcast. My guest today is John Dillon, and John is going to talk about his music. He's going to talk about recovery, all sorts of stuff. So, John, why don't you just introduce yourself and we'll go from there.
Well, thank you so much, Dwayne. It's really nice to be here. Where to start? I guess I could start at the beginning of when music really came into my life. And I grew up in the 60s, the 1960s, and I was fortunate to hear the Beatles when they performed on the Ed Sullivan Show back in 1964.
And wow.
I think that was a real something that really opened my eyes. I had never heard anything like that or seen anything like that before. And also the fact that the girls seemed to really love these four guys with guitars. And I thought, wow,
right.
You know, maybe I should take up guitar. Long story short, my aunt happened to give me a guitar for my 13th birthday, and I just started playing along with records and learning how to play. And
you also make guitars, right? You also make them?
That was something that came along maybe a decade later. You know, I loved the instrument so much that I decided to learn how to make them.
Wow. So let's get to the next part, I guess, where since we're talking about addiction and recovery and music, how did these things start to pull together?
Well, I guess the having grown up in the 60s, it was the hippie generation, and I was a rebellious teenager, and drugs and alcohol were part of the music scene back then as I grew in my teenage years. And it was fun back then. It was inspiring creatively. We and my friends got together to play music and jam and get high, and it was all
right.
But fast forward, maybe five more years, seven more years, then the drugs and alcohol were not fun anymore. And I became, in the 80s, I became addicted to cocaine, and that was what really led me to my bottom, to my surrender.
Wow. So you were playing music in the beginning. It was really something that, I guess what you said, it's like offered inspiration or opened you up or allowed you to be different, I guess, in a different state and really let your creativity kind of come out through that state. But then something changed.
Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of interesting. Yeah. And sandwiched in there, you know, I was living the hippie life for a good 2-3 years. And then I ended up joining a meditation community in northern New Mexico. Started out as a commune, but there was a meditation teacher, a guru. And one of the requirements was to give up drugs and alcohol. So for actually about 8 years, I was in meditation morning and evening, and Sundays we would get together as a group, and it was a real spiritual community. And I found that through that, I was able to experience that creative high that I did get from drugs without drugs. And so that was a real interesting part of my growth, my spiritual growth. But then that sort of came to an end, because my marriage, which was part of that group, came to an end. And when I left the group, then the drugs and alcohol started to creep back into my life.
Right. So there was a time for you when you were, you know, sober, I guess, mm-hmm. to call it that, and that you weren't using, and you really were finding your creativity out of your own spirit, out of mindfulness, out of being present. But it sounds like there were these underlying things that were still lurking there. And once that structure ended, I guess, or stopped, that the drugs and alcohol started to come back.
Right. Yeah. It was like my growth stopped, and then I was on this other path for a while. And when I left that, I just felt like I wanted to start experimenting again. So gradually, this was in the early 80s, and cocaine was pretty prevalent in those years. And
right.
So I got in with a group of people, musicians that were using cocaine on a regular basis. And so it just grew and grew and grew to a point where I was living a double life. And there's actually one of the songs on my album is called The Double Life. And
I
traveled. At that time, I was working in a family business and traveled a lot. And I found that when I was home with my family, I was one person. And when I was out on the road, which was when I was able to acquire the drugs, so I found myself living a very, very different life at that time.
I have a question. Did you, in that first kind of part of using before you went to the meditation retreat, had you used cocaine then, or never had really experimented with it? And then this new, like in the 80s when cocaine was all over the place, you found that, and that did something for you that was completely different. I make up.
Yeah, you're correct. In the late 60s was primarily marijuana and psychedelics, LSD, mescaline, things like that. It was more mind expanding drugs,
I would
classify them. Cocaine was something quite different.
It created a different something in you that your body, I guess, and your brain and your mind really stuck to.
Yeah. It was a different sort of a high, but it made me feel, I don't know, powerful in a certain crazy way. Yeah. Once I really started going down that path, it wasn't long before I craved it. You know, it wasn't just doing it for fun. It was more of a craving that I had to satisfy.
Yeah, and I would imagine like ending that relationship, your marriage, and moving out of that community would be a huge emotional upset, a huge emotional life stressor. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, cocaine made you feel powerful, feel strong, feel all these other things. I can see how that would be, that feeling would be attractive. That feeling would have such a draw to you.
Yeah. It was like I was coming out of my shell. It was a pretty sheltered life that I was living in that spiritual community. And so I had to cope with the world in a way that I hadn't before. And I think the alcohol and the cocaine helped with that.
Right. So it started to get bad. One of your songs called White Flag is all about that moment when it's you surrender, right? Exactly. So tell us about that and tell us, because I really like that song. So
yeah, okay. I like to call it a divine intervention in the form of a run-in with the law. I was, on a cocaine alcohol bender in driving around in a part of town I shouldn't have been driving around in. And I got pulled over by the cops and they asked me to see if I could walk in a straight line. And I was pretty high. I found that there was a balance I could do with alcohol and cocaine, that, the alcohol got me one way and then the cocaine brought me back the other way. And I could almost walk the straight line, but they weren't having any of it. So they started they searched the car and there was a bag of Coke in there and an open bottle of wine. So that was it. I was handcuffed and hauled in.
That was the end of the double life.
Yeah, well, it was the end of the double life. It was the beginning of my recovery, my reconciliation. As I said, I was working for my family's business at that time, and we had a reputation to uphold. And when my arrest hit the newspapers, and I say in the song, the evening news,
yeah,
I had to confess to my family. I couldn't hide it from them anymore. And like the song says, there's a verse in the song where it says, I wound up in my mother's room crying out this painful tune. And basically I had broken down. I had given up. I had to confess to my mother and I could speak with my mother more easily than I could speak with my father at that time. So, but fortunately, wow. Yeah. And so I said, okay, you don't know this about me, but this is who I am. And this is what I've been doing. And, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's like one of those stories where the double life, the two lives just crash together. I mean, here it is in the newspaper, public, everywhere. Like yeah. you can't run from that.
Right. And so at that point I realized I had no choice but to ask for help. And my family, my mom and dad had a friend in their generation who was a recovering alcoholic, and he worked as an intake counselor for a treatment center up in northeastern Pennsylvania. And I asked my mom to give him a call, and he came over and we had a pretty deep conversation. And he said, I think they have a bed with your name on it up there. And so he said, can you hang on until tomorrow? And I said, yep, I can do that.
Wow. So you the help started to appear for you as you kind of surrendered to that process.
Yeah.
And you got there and you went into treatment.
Yep. Went into treatment the next day. I was ready. I knew I wanted to change, but before I couldn't do it on my own. And I knew that if I did what they said, and if I really was a good student, so to speak.
Right.
Which, I had experience in the past of, school experiences where I was really dedicated and did very well. So I kind of treated this like a summer camp, boot camp kind of an experience where I could leave the whole world behind that was causing all these problems in my life. And when I first got there, they were assigning different jobs, physical tasks for people to do, chores, so to speak. And I volunteered to be the person who took the trash out every day. And I thought that that was a metaphor for taking the trash out of my brain and giving it away and putting that behind me.
So you really went all in at this point. You just said, I have to do this. I want to change. I want to get out of this space. I can't do this anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. And I knew that my life really depended on it. You know, if I had kept going down the path I was going down, I knew it was going to end in even bigger disaster than losing my family's trust and support.
Wow.
But ironically, by confessing to my parents and to my wife at that time, they were very supportive. And so I found the help I needed at that rehab. I was there for 28 days. And when I left, they said, you can't go home unless you get a temporary sponsor. So I knew, well, one of the cool things is that when I was at this treatment center, they were having it was in August, and they had their annual alumni reunion. And people came from far and wide for a Saturday afternoon and told their stories about how they got their help at this treatment center. And I ran into a fellow that I had known from my hometown. His name was Bob. I asked him, I said, would you be my temporary sponsor? And he said, yes. And we talked for a while. Long story short, he became my temporary sponsor and helped me through the 12 steps. And it's really kind of interesting because you don't hear this very often, but he is still my sponsor to this day, 29 years later.
Wow, that's amazing. What an amazing relationship. And, you know, working through the steps, that's hard work. And that's like deep work. And to have that kind of relationship with someone, that's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, we were up and down for a while and over the years, and I've had years of being more involved with 12-step recovery and less involved. But it sort of goes in cycles. And right now I'm in a cycle where I'm really concentrating on service and wanting to take what I've learned over these years and seeing if I can help others by sharing my story through music.
Awesome. Let's start talking about that. You had music at the very beginning. I mean, it's been such a big part of your life. How did it start to help your recovery? And then I'd love to talk about your album Hope Road from Addiction to Recovery and how that weaved into that and how you're pulling that all together.
Yeah, as I said, music has been a very important part of my life all through these ups and downs. When I first got into recovery, I started writing about things that were happening to me, wishes, hopes. But I found that the creative process of writing and songwriting, which was my natural drift, it really helped me to process what was going on inside of myself. And just putting them down on paper and some of them eventually turning into songs was a very important part. And I've done a lot of research on the creative process. I've actually written a book called The 2020 Creativity Solution, where I've studied creativity. And I think one of the interesting things in how it relates to 12-step recovery is that when we're engaged in the creative flow, it's like we're able to connect with a higher power in some ways. And I think early on, creative process helped me to strengthen my relationship with a higher power.
Right, to be able to open yourself up to that process. I mean, I think when I look at creativity, I think that it's a very vulnerable space to be in because you're just letting stuff flow from you. And if you're, I guess, restrained or not, it can be difficult to do. Right. Mm-hmm. So getting to that flow state in recovery.
Yeah, it's a challenge. then I guess I had experience with it before, so it came pretty naturally to me.
So how did you start to put down these songs, and how did you start to write them, and how did you structure this album?
Well, as I said, I've been writing songs and playing music pretty much all my life, but I guess about 6 months ago, it was in the fall of 2021, I took a songwriting class online, and one of the assignments was to start a song by writing a letter to someone with whom I had unfinished business.
Ah.
And I thought, oh man, well, I could write about my ex-wife, but what came out after a little bit of free writing was a letter to my disease of alcoholism, my disease of addiction. I wrote a letter to the disease as a first-person narrative. And what emerged from that was the song Addiction, which is on the album. So I started talking to the disease and how it made me feel, and you know, just how helpless I was at the time and how you caught up in the cycle. And I played it for the class. And I think I was the only person in recovery in the class. There were, I guess, about 8 or 10 other people. And I played it for them. And they were kind of blown away. They said, this is a real important story, and you should really tell this story. And so that kind of provided the impetus. Well, okay, I've written a song about addiction. Now, what would come next? Well, how about my surrender? How did I come out of the addiction? And so White Flag was the second song that I wrote.
Right, right. Yeah. And how you moved through that whole process. It's like in the album, it's that whole journey.
Yeah, the album, I structured it in such a way that it's chronological. And I start with my life as a hippie. I spent years hitchhiking and traveling all over the country. That's a song called Sacramento to Cheyenne, talking about riding a freight train with my buddy Charlie. Ended up going to Woodstock. That was a huge turning point. That song kind of portrays in a capsule the hippie life. And then I go into the double life, which is what we talked about earlier, where I started living two different lives and getting into the depths of my addiction. And then we go into a song that I just talked about, Addiction. And the song after that is called War. And that song was written by my son, Jackson.
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah. And he and I have a similar tendency. He's in early recovery right now, and he doesn't mind me telling people that this is a song that he wrote when he was in his addiction called War. And it's about that war that goes on within yourself when you want to stop, but you can't stop. You want to stop, you know you have to stop, but you can't. And so I thought that I really wanted to put that song in there.
Yeah.
And then we get into the surrender and the recovery part of it.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, when you listen to your songs, it's like I can feel the emotion that is expressed in them, the struggle, and it's such a good way to put that together, like to be able to communicate the feelings that go along with addiction, like your son's song War or White Flag or any of those, to be able to capture that moment, that feeling that you're having. Because sometimes words don't really, how do you say it? I don't want to say word, just talking about it doesn't do it. Sometimes this kind of expression can help get that out there.
Well, that's my hope. And I think there's a certain magic about music, and that it carries a message in a way that can reach people more directly, more powerfully than the spoken word.
Right. So you take your music to different places, to different recovery places, to recovery houses, to recovery coffee shops, mm-hmm. all of that. Tell me a little bit about doing that work and performing for others and bringing this message to others who might be struggling out there?
Well, that's where my focus is right now, now that the album has been released. We had a CD release concert at Cafe Lena up here in Saratoga Springs, New York, to a very responsive audience. And I'm now in the process of booking opportunities to play at rehabs, treatment centers. I performed at a sober coffee house in Pennsylvania a couple of months ago. So now it's really about going out there and taking these songs to where people might be able to respond to the message.
What does it mean to you to be able to do this, to be able to give this back?
Well, I feel like it's something I've been working toward my whole life. You know, I'm 71 years old. You know, all my life, there have been little pieces of this that are starting to make sense. You know, the guitar, the performing, the guitar playing, even the guitar making. In my performances, I use a handmade guitar that I made myself. And over the years, I've written songs that were more personal. I've written political songs. But I feel like right now, this project kind of brings it all together in a way that's really who I am, you know, and I'm able to really share a piece of who I am with people. I think in the past, I've kind of been skirting around the issue a little bit, but with Hope Road, I really had to dig deep. I really had to say, okay, what do I really feel here? What does this really mean to me? And hopefully I've gotten there to a point where really reach people.
Yeah, I'm kind of inspired by that you've taken all of this experience of your life and your own suffering and pain. And I'm just thinking about what you were talking about earlier, being there with your mom and having to tell her what's going on and feeling all of that shame and disappointment and anguish. And then to this point now where you're sharing all the hope and the wisdom and all the learning to share to others that there's a possibility of something different.
Yeah. I think you've encapsulated what my mission is here. And I really appreciate that you get that. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. It's meaningful in a way on my side to just witness it and in my way, like be a part of that. It's pretty amazing.
Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit more about some of the recovery songs that bring hope and possibility to everybody's life.
Yeah. So we got to White Flag Where I Surrendered, and that was really the turning point. The next song is 30 Years of Tears, which is actually a cover of a John Hiatt song about his experience in rehab. And I couldn't help but use that because it's such a great song. Then I go into a song called The Help I Need, which talks about my early life in the 12-step program and my work that I did with my sponsor. And it just kind of encapsulates service, helping others, and how the recovery works. And Learn to Serve is a song about service. It's more of a rock and roll kind of song, but it's about how if I can help people with this music, with this message, then I will have accomplished a lot. And then there is I'll skip forward a little bit. There's a song called Gratitude, which for me, being grateful and sharing gratitude is a real key to my sobriety. When I'm trying to go to sleep at night, if I can't sleep, I make myself a gratitude list in my head. And then there's a song called BYOG, which 12-step recovery is a spiritual program. And it doesn't matter what your religion is or your lack of religion. We talk about a higher power. And I got the idea for this song from Arlo Guthrie. Uh-huh. Arlo bought a church back in the late 60s in Western Massachusetts. And the townspeople said, well, what kind of church is it? He said it's a bring your own God church. And so I thought, well, that kind of encapsulates the whole God of our understanding concept. And it doesn't matter what your religion is, there's a way to get better.
There's a way to get better. I love that. And I love that approach because it's open to everybody. You know, you want help and support, bring your own spirituality, bring your own God to the process. There's no one right way. Mm-hmm. There's many ways to the same place.
Right, right. And I'm not here to say that 12-step is the only way. It works for me, and that there are definitely many other ways out there. And then the album closes with Hope Road, which is the title track, and talks about how my life is today and how recovery has manifested itself in my life and how grateful I am to be living this life and to be traveling on the road of hope.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can feel that as you talk. I think a lot of people, when they're in the midst of addiction, can't see that piece of it. You know, they can't see that hope. They can't see that possibility. They can't see that you can have an incredible life. You have to do the work, I guess.
Definitely.
It doesn't just come to you. It doesn't fall in your lap. You have to work for it, but it's worth the work.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm so grateful that they say putting down the drink and the drug is just the beginning. Then you get to dig in deep and find out what were the causes and conditions and what things you can change and how you can change them.
And almost this is just the normal process of addiction and recovery. It's everyone, I think, who's in recovery or in addiction has to take these steps.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. In the song, I say 12 road signs guide us home.
Yeah, it's like a pathway that you can take, something you can do to make those changes happen. Wow, John, thank you so much for coming on to The Addicted Mind and sharing. I usually ask one question before we go, and that's just someone out there may be struggling, and you could say one thing to them. What would you want to tell them? What would you want them to know in this moment?
Well, I would say the word hope pretty much says hope. It all. I certainly did not feel it when I was in early recovery, but I did see how people had changed. I mentioned earlier on, we had that reunion at the rehab when I was there, and I could see how these people were living really good, happy, joyful lives. And to me, that really gave me hope. So I would say to someone who is suffering, it's worth it to do whatever you need to do to get on the path to recovery.
And here you are giving hope to others. So thank you so much, John, for coming on to The Addicted Mind. I just really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's been a great conversation. I've really enjoyed it.
Oh, and before we go, real quick, where can people find you?
Yes. HopeRoadMusic.com is my website. And there you can find links to get the album. And what I'd like to also say is that it's available on a pay what you wish basis. I don't want a financial barrier to be there. You can get it for $1 if you want. You can get it for, I actually had somebody bought one for $100. So it averages out. My mission is to help as many people as I can with this music. So go to HopeRoadMusic.com. And that's where you can find us.
Right. We're going to put a song at the end of this episode. And I don't think we had talked about different ones, but which one do you want to put here?
Let's suggest The Help I Need, because I think
that's
the one that was the real turning point for me. And it really talks about how it works and what we can do to get better.
Awesome. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Addicted Mind podcast. As usual, you can find all the links in the show notes at theaddictedmind.com. And don't forget, stay tuned after this episode to hear a track from John's album, Hope Road, From Addiction to Recovery. The track title is The Help I Need. And if you are enjoying the Addicted Mind podcast, if you're getting a lot out of it, please leave a review in iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play, wherever you get your podcast. That really does help people find the Addicted Mind. And I really appreciate it. I do read those reviews and take them seriously. So thank you so much for everyone who has done that. I really do appreciate it. And think about joining our Facebook group. Just go to Facebook and type in The Addicted Mind Podcast. Click join and continue the conversation online. All right, everyone, have a wonderful day. And I will talk to you on the next episode.
I finally surrendered and confessed my addiction had brought me to my knees. When I truly admitted my life was a mess, the help I needed was there for me. My friend said I could stop the runaway train, been where I'd been, found a way to face the fear, ease the pain, live a good life day to day. The help I needed was there for me, just had to ask and had to be honest about my faults and mistakes, open to a new way of life, willing to do whatever it takes. The help I needed was there for me. We met for coffee at the Daily Grind and down some old church basement stair. Room full of folks, all different kinds. The scent of coffee filled the air. Listen to stories of where they'd been, did what they said, kept coming back, made the coffee and a few new friends. Soon my life was getting back on track. The help I needed was there for me, just had to ask and had to be honest about my faults and mistakes, open to a new way of life, willing to do whatever it takes. The help I needed was there for me. Dug in deep to clear my past, shared my secrets with a trusted friend, prayed my faults be removed at last. To those I'd hurt, I made amends. Better, the fog had cleared, a whole lot less pain and strife, shame and fear had disappeared, a spirit force was working in my life, days of joy, days of sorrow, a bumpy road, but I'll be fine, don't think about tomorrow, take it one day at a time. The help I need is there for me, just have to ask
I'm Madeline, and I'm the host of the Happiest Sober podcast. I got sober in my 20s after a decade of gray area drinking, and the greatest plot twist of all time was realizing that alcohol, the thing that I thought made my life the most happy and fun and exciting, was actually the exact thing preventing me from living my happiest and best life. My mom is 40 years sober, and she joins me on my podcast very often. I like to call her my part-time co-host, and I also bring you solo episodes where I share my top tips, tricks, and mindset shifts in sobriety, and lots of how-tos for navigating all the things sober, from weddings to parties to holidays to bachelorette parties to trips. I'm also joined by so many guests who come on and share their sober stories, and they're all so, so inspiring. I'm here to show you that life doesn't end when you quit drinking. In fact, it's very much the opposite. And no matter what your relationship was with alcohol, life can be the absolute happiest when you're sober. New episodes come out every Tuesday. You can listen to Happiest Sober podcast wherever you get your podcasts.